Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends and partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have much to talk about this week, not the least of which is a little product promo that I'm going to do. So I'm going to try to fill the Air Jordans of the Michael Jordan of the promo read Barnabas Piper. And I've got my own thing to talk about, boys. I've got a new essay collection.
I hope I don't get Wally Pipped on this.
No, you're not. You're not going to get Wally Pipped. It's going to be awkward and workmanlike when I do it.
Gee, guys, that's what I was thinking. Don't Wally Pip Pipe.
Good. Yeah, sports reference, Big R. Did you know that was a sports reference?
I have no idea what you guys are talking about, obviously. I'm better than that.
Well, let's... Piper, rather than explaining it, let's
I'm better than sports references. Carry on, Big T. I want to hear about your book.
Oh, yeah, you're better. Yeah. You're planning your normal pastor's European... month with the Wilson family. So
I'm planning my banner tweet is what I'm planning. We'll talk about that later.
There you go. Dude, some Yoda-esque banner tweets and a European vacation with the Wilsons. That's pastoring in 2019. I love it. Yeah. I don't want to keep you from that, baby. I know you've got time constraints, but boys, I've got a new essay collection that dropped. I've always wanted to do an essay collection, an essay book. And, the book is called A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day. And I think it's my favorite cover of all time in my publishing career. So it features a picture of my son, Maxim. So Maxim was running at the state cross-country meet last year. And the designer for the cover just pulled that out. It's a real kind of minimalist cover, just Mazzy in the title. But it's a collection of 65 essays on sports, pop culture, Christian life, etc. The publisher is Gut Check Press. And you can find it on a little retailer that we've partnered with. And I'm really excited about this company because I feel like maybe they do good work. It's Amazon.com. So, again, if you go onto the internet and you type in www.amazon.com, you can find my book. And here's the crazy thing, guys. A portion of all the proceeds for each book purchase goes to Amazon. So Amazon takes a it's a really
well they need some help right now, man. They're an upcoming venture.
I feel like it's kind of a unique contract that we worked out in that they get a cut and I get a cut. So I'm really excited to see how that works. But I actually am stoked about the book. This is the first book that I've done in a lot of years that I'm actually excited about releasing and having come out. So it's called A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day, essay collection. If you enjoy my work, my radio work on this podcast, or you've enjoyed my writing in the past, you should run to this little retailer, Amazon, and pick one up. But part of the deal, boys, we did this one kind of punk rock, a little bit under the traditional publishing radar. And as such, we actually did a Kickstarter to fund the production of the book. And we had some people kickstart at a pretty high level. We call these our White Knights. And part of the White Knight package is they get to have their names read on the radio. So I need to read five names before we get started. Is that okay with you guys?
By all means.
It feels crass. It just feels crassly commercial for me to do this.
Yeah, because we're never commercial on this podcast. Never, ever.
No, dude, we're artists with integrity. It's all about the integrity of the work on this radio program. So I feel like I'm kind of pushing the boundaries of that a little bit with this. But I want to thank my man Andrew Rafa. Andrew Rafa from Wilmington, Delaware is the White Knight. My boy Biatch, Bradley Atchison from East Lansing, Michigan. Biatch is a good friend of mine. We go way back. We have one from the United Kingdom.
I thought that was a nickname for him for a second when you said Biatch. So I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah. So it's Biatch because Brad Atchison.
Right. Yes.
It's just kind of a mashup of his two names.
Dude, I love Brad. I know Brad. Brad's the
man. Do you know Biatch? How do you know Biatch?
Totally. I just knew him from URC back in the day.
Yeah, from the old days of traveling up to Michigan from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brad's a good dude. Also a good dude, Aleed Wilkinson from the United Kingdom. So he's from a town called Kirkwall in the UK. And when I finally make my Lord Grantham kind of Downton Abbey tour at some point, you'll probably hit that with the Wilsons next year when you do your
absolute
normal pastors European getaway for a month, but maybe one day I'll get there too, and I can say hello to a lead and thank him in person. Two more names. This one is a little more challenging. Daichi Saruta from LA, from your old neck of the woods, Ron.
Did you get that right, babe? I mean, was that?
I think I got it right, man. I'm gonna say that I got it right.
All right.
Even though,
just say it with confidence.
I'm saying it with confidence. And then we got an easy one to end. Samuel Barber from Georgia. Good old American South. So Samuel Barber, Daichi Saruta, Aleed Wilkinson, Biatch, and Andrew Rafa. Tip of the cap to you all. Thank you for making the funnest book that I've done in a decade possible. So I had a blast doing it. I love the cover. A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day. Check it out.
The cover is nice. I like
Amazon.com. Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks a lot. And I was excited to be able to put Mazzy on it.
Who did the design?
Zachary Bartles, the great Zach Bartles. So he does a little design work in his spare time.
He's a man of many talents.
Yeah. So that's by far my favorite cover. He crushed it. He is a man of many talents. Absolutely. But boys, we are men of many talents, and I don't want that to get lost in the weeds of commerce here. And we have a lot to talk about, namely the fact that something that happened 10 years ago has since resurfaced on the internet and on social media, and it involves Pipe's dad, and it's really funny. So Piper, why don't you set this up? Talk about the context for this thing, like how you ran across it again a decade later, and kind of how people are responding to it. And then I've got some specifics on it that I want to talk about.
Okay, so yeah, it must have been, I don't know, it must have been mid-2000s, so 2006, 2008, something like that. My dad was speaking to the American Association of Christian Counselors. And there's a video clip, and actually Relevant Magazine reshared this with sort of some pithy commentary comparing it to Curb Your Enthusiasm and The Office and some other those humor shows that are completely based on awkwardness. And he stands up, and anybody who's heard him preach knows that he is, you know, he's always earnest. He fires out of the gates serious in any context. Oh, yeah. Like, he doesn't lead with a joke. He doesn't lead with a, so yesterday I was talking to someone. Like, no. He starts with either let's pray or a text or this is where I'm going today. And he just goes.
Yeah.
And that's what he does here. And then you just hear... You hear laughter starting, and he's talking through personal struggles and difficulties and challenges, and a collection of counselors are like guffawing at him, and he gets more and more frustrated with it. Well, what the video does not show, and this is the fun little backstory, is that they made a mistake in the introductions for this thing. Either they had the order of show wrong, or they just got the introduction wrong. And he was announced as a comedian of a different name. So they were supposed to have Christian comedian as part of this thing. And then
John Mulaney, everybody.
That's right. Yeah. And then John Piper strolls out there. And, you know, he's kind of dressed like a 1990s comedian as well, because he's got a gray suit on with like one of those shimmery burgundy shirts. Probably because my mom shopped at TJ Maxx or something like that, and then then a not quite matching burgundy tie. So you got like the gray burgundy sort of. It looks very Christian comedian-ish if you don't know who he is. And he starts
looks like a 1950s like Borscht Belt comedian. He should be playing the Catskills.
Yes, and so this whole setup where he was set up to fail. He also just – he's not reading the room and kind of understanding what's going on or where the gaffe was. So he's super frustrated, you know, like, stop laughing at me. I'm being serious kind of thing. And and it just
– I love it.
It was a genuine delight. I don't know if he was delighted. It was delightful for those of us who got to watch at just the mix-up.
Yeah. No, it's great, man. So I actually think – There's a couple things at play here, and you can shed some more light on this, Pipe, because you've been around and traveled with your dad, I'm guessing, to a lot of these things over the years. But there's a certain – and actually Ron needs to speak to this because he's conference man. He's been in more conference settings than any of us combined. But I feel like conference audiences are eager to laugh for any reason. I mean, you get people like out of their homes, out of their offices. You throw some like – gift bags at them and conference food and lanyards, and like they're just ready to laugh at the drop of a hat. So it occurs to me that this isn't probably a great setting for your dad. And also, like, I think Reformedom has a certain level of comfortability with earnestness and like sin talk that the rest of the world just, even the Christian world, just has no concept of. So the idea of a guy getting up there and like talking about his own sin struggles strikes us reform dudes as totally normal, but for the rest of the world, maybe not. So, Piper, what kind of this was just a Christian counseling conference? Is that the deal?
Yeah, it's the American Association of Christian Counselors, and it's several thousand people. So I think it's both professional counselors as well as like, you know, people who do counseling at churches. So you can be part of this association. Yeah. So, I mean, these are people who are accustomed to kind of living in other people's mess. And so which adds a whole other level of irony and amusement to their reaction to his seriousness, because you expect them to be sitting there, you know, with like reading glasses pursed into their nose, kind of nodding knowingly and jotting down the occasional no, just yes, tell me more, now how did you feel when, and instead they're just busting a gut at somebody being very sincere with them. it was amazing.
Now, Pipe, have you talked to your dad since this thing resurfaced?
I haven't. I'm sure I think I talked to him about it relatively shortly after it happened, you know, because it made its rounds then. And I think he was sort of bemused and like, I don't even know what happened. Like, I got up there and I didn't know why they were laughing, and I guess there was a mix up, and you know. Oh, and then I think it settled down after this. But yeah, he didn't have any strong feelings. He certainly wasn't mad at I think in the moment he was very frustrated at the audience, because
sure,
you know, you talk about the reform camp being comfortable with sin. Nobody is more comfortable, you know, dwelling on sin than John Piper is. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he's in it. That space, and they're all laughing, and so he was very nonplussed.
I mean, it's uproarious laughter too, right?
So it really like, is. Yeah, it's says like conference stuff, laughter.
I mean, literally, it is like they just go bonkers with laughter. That's what kind of laughter we're talking about. Like the kind of laughter where it's like, we paid $90 a ticket to hear our favorite comedian kind of laughter.
Which tells me, it's, you know, the fact that he was announced as a comedian, or it was announced that a comedian was coming out, tells me that like people don't laugh at comedians because they're funny. They laugh because they're primed to laugh. Because absolutely, he doesn't say anything that even – it sounds like a joke setup to a degree, because you can set up a joke anyhow. Like, I mean, people have joked about Pop-Tarts and cereal and having kids and, you know, whatever. Like, you can joke about anything, but there's no punchlines.
Well, it's like that weird, like, self-deprecating, dry kind of humor. Like, but, like, given the irony of who he's talking to – I mean, like, you can see why it would have been funny, right?
Yeah.
Because he's like, he's basically talking about things pertaining to his own sin and his own, I guess, you know, you could say like need for counseling. And they're kind of reading it that way, you know, it almost like, hey, these are scenarios that you guys face all the time. And here's the irony. So do I. Ha ha. You know, and it was, I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect.
Who's his comedy comp? Like in the real world of comedy, I mean, he looks like Larry David, and he's actually kind of dry like Larry David. So I mean that could be a perfect like player comp for your dad. But if he was a comedian, who would he be?
To channel Larry David, they're like the bizarro versions of one another, because they're both sort of a bit gloomy at times.
Yeah,
they look exactly like one another, but. But Larry David lives in the like the minutia and the obscure and the bizarre, whereas my dad, he lives in the minutia, but it's like of the weightiest things in the world.
He
is at one end of the spectrum in terms of no, I only want to think of things with eternal significance, and then you've got Larry David, who's like, I only want to think of things that happened yesterday at 10:23 a.m. that nobody noticed but me. So they're sort of the bizarro version of each other. It's hard to give a comedic comp because he doesn't do funny.
So that's my next question. Like you spent, you know, 18 years under the same roof as this guy. And then, you know, as an adult, I'm sure you talk weekly or whatever, but, does your dad think anyone's funny? And if so, who does he think is funny?
Okay, so my dad loves What About Bob, for example.
Okay.
I've seen him. Laugh,
I love that movie.
I've seen him laugh so hard he like falls off a couch almost at that movie. The comedy of like Princess Bride. Again, notice the theme here. These are both like 30-year-old movies.
Yep.
40 maybe in Princess Bride's case. So like that sort of really well-written repartee cleverness. I've seen him really laugh at some like British comedy kind of stuff that's just that sort of thing. Who is the comedian Bob Newhart?
Dude, I knew he would love Bob Newhart.
Newhart would be a comedic comp if there was one. He's just sort of that, you know, he doesn't really raise his voice. He's just dry, understated, but like he could just be so bluntly devastating. So he my dad definitely has a sense of humor. He just doesn't joke. Like he doesn't tell jokes. He loves like a good storyteller. So like if we're ever having dinner and you know, one or two of my brothers are much funnier as storytellers than the rest of us. And they start, you know, they'll kind of regale us with something. And he loves that. And he loves to laugh. So he's not like a humorless person at all. Just he never intends to be funny when he stands in front of people ever. If he's funny, it is completely like off the cuff by accident or because he says something tongue in cheek or whatever. But he's never telling a joke.
Dude, does he still rock that like Don Corleone suit from time to time with the maroon shiny shirt? Have you seen that in a few
Don
years?
Don Corleone or like early 2000s prom goer is what I would have compared it to. He's like
or like Night at the Roxbury kind.
Yeah, he's one cheap boutonniere away from going to prom in that thing. I think he's moved away from the shimmery shirts. I think maybe somebody gave him some. Those look bad on camera. Fashion sense.
I got you.
They also now, look bad in person, but that's a separate issue.
One more question on this, and this one might hit a little bit close to home for all three of us. He attended our last live show and was very, you know, conspicuously in the audience. Did he think we were funny that night? Did he say anything about whether the three of us were funny?
He did think it was funny. I think there was enough sort of insider joking that at various points he was like, I don't know what these guys are talking about. His main piece of feedback to that was that I let you guys off the hook too easy for your terrible takes about cats, because he thinks cats are of the devil.
There we go.
So he
there we go.
He when I walk back to him during the intermission, he goes, "You went way too easy on those guys."
He said that to me too, by the way.
Which brought me right back to like junior high football when he would pull me aside after games and be like, "You need to get low and knock that guy on his butt," kind of thing. And so
he gave you notes after football games. I love that.
He was also very supportive. He wasn't the dad who always tore me apart. But yeah, he was always like the "You can hustle harder, you can hit harder, you can run harder, like you can do everything with more effort." It was kind of his plays itself out in how he handles his business.
Nice. Now that sound you hear, boys, is everyone in Reformed them getting rid of their cats after they listen to this. John Piper is against cats, then so is the Reformed world. Boys, I want to make a little pivot here into something that you guys shared in our pre-show production meeting, and that is an essay that this guy from Skillet named John Cooper. I'm not a Skillet fan or listener, so I don't know like what this guy does for Skillet. What is he, like the guitar player, or does he sing? What's the deal?
Lead singer.
Oh, lead singer. Okay, which, there we go. The main guy.
For the listener's sake, I know this because I am looking at an article that leads with John Cooper, lead singer for the rock band Skillet. I didn't know who he was prior to this.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, like he wrote a thing on Facebook, I guess, about all this apostasy that we're seeing in the Christian world. I assume Joshua Harris and I guess some guy from Hillsong chucked his faith as well recently. And so this guy from Skillet writes this essay about it, and apparently it's generating a bunch of traction. And I read it, so I read it before the program here, and I got to tell you, like, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty well said. Big R, man of the cloth. We have men of the cloth now on the show, so it's going to be some time before I get used to that. But as our longest tenured man of the cloth, what do you make of this, man? What did you make of the content of his essay, first of all?
Yeah, I thought content-wise, I thought it was good, man. He brought up a couple of points that nobody else has really tapped on, and I'm trying to get to it and remember what. But yeah, he brought, and Pipe would probably be better at remembering that than me. But he brought he kind of had a couple of fine points on sort of just the direction and tone that these people have been taking as they're publicly kind of walking away, that I thought was really interesting. And he was really he was direct. He was honest. He wasn't mean. And but he was incredibly centered on the right thing. So this is obviously a dude that has thought through this. He's obviously somebody that's committed to Christ. And I think he said, you know, given his role and his position, I think some of the things he said were brave. He's definitely going to take some hits with this, because in some places people are going to think that he was, you know, a little unloving and lacked some grace. I would disagree with that, of course, but because I think his tone was good. But some people are going to take it, given that he's coming at it from the side of the music industry, which has to be incredibly like inclusionary about all things and everyone. That's where he's going to take some pretty big hits. Now, from our tribe, because he was so direct. And because he kind of brought everything back to, you know, we need men that, you know, are centered on the gospel, stay true to their beliefs. You know, that kind of a tone with it. I think he's going to be praised by people in our tribe. But it was really interesting. I don't know anything about Cooper. You know, I don't know where he's at theologically, where he's. I don't know anything about Skillet. I've literally never heard one of their songs. But it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely got people, you know, kind of buzzing and hyped about it. So I'm wondering what's going to happen. I'm wondering if we're going to see him speaking at a conference next year now, is what I'm wondering.
Oh, baby, you got more competition. Doggone it. There's another one. Another one gunning for that.
Don't worry, Ronnie. He is not a normal pastor. So I think you're safe.
No, I'm not worried. He's going to get asked to the conferences. I'm too normal to be asked to speak at.
That's fair.
But those gift bags that should go to you, and he might open them.
Just has a few more fans than I do, boys. So we're in different leagues. So
he's probably too eager with the gift bags, though. But I'll tell you what I liked about it. Yeah. I really loved how like innocent it was. And I guess in the era of like curated statements and think pieces and cleverness, just like. We're in an oversaturated moment of cleverness, I think, and I lump myself into that category in that I wrote a Joshua Harris thing too that I didn't publish. I kind of wrote it for myself, and it sounded too much like me, you know. It sounded too much like me trying to be clever, trying to like speak whatever into the issue. And I guess I like the unguardedness of this. It seemed like a guy just kind of. Again, like you said, Bigar, lovingly and I think graciously making strong points.
It felt from the heart to me.
It did feel from the heart.
I totally agree. Yeah. There was nothing clever about it. He wasn't talking like a theologian where he's trying to make sort of these epic tweetable quotes and points.
Right.
He was saying, man, this lacks logic. This doesn't make any sense. Can we talk about it from that angle? And can we talk about the fact that these are people that after 20 years of you know, preaching something that they allegedly believed in, they make this turn, and now their first response is to start preaching sort of this new set of beliefs. And so it was a really interesting point. And again, he breaks that down a little bit, but he did it in such like an everyman way, which was just common sense and logic. And so I think that's why everybody is kind of taken back in a good way, where it's like, wow, he said this so plainly. You know, we've actually missed some things in this, is what he kind of illustrated by his article, for sure. You know, I agree.
Go ahead, Pop.
I was gonna say, he does a thing that I feel like most of the people who respond to these, most people are trying to kind of read into things too much, or, you know, what was the cause of this? Where was that person's heart at? Could we have seen this coming? And he just takes a step back from all that and just like, I have a few obvious questions, except they're the kinds of obvious questions that we fail to ask. And he just walks through it. And, you know, like his first question is, why is it that when people who have been such bold, outspoken proponents of something, in this case, the gospel, for a long time, immediately feel the need to be a bold, outspoken proponent of the opposite. Like, why aren't they embarrassed or humbled or fearful or confused? Like, why are they so eager to go in a direction that they can't even define? Which is just sort of a common, sensical response to a thing that I think we've gotten so accustomed to the insanity of it that we don't even think about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, it struck me that this was like tonally very different than Carl Truman's article, but like content-wise very similar. But the kind of thing that obviously would never run on First Things, and it would never be read by the same people who are reading First Things. But it said a lot of the same stuff. So tip of the cap to this guy for doing good work. Big R, like any final thoughts on this kind of thing? Like as a clergyman, as a man of the cloth, like is it? This strikes me as one of the few like kind of good manifestations of social media in that you have, you know, somebody speaking a word of truth into a crazy culture. Like, does this encourage you as a man of the cloth?
Yeah, totally. I think it does. And I think it's because, again, so man of the cloth, but like having existed in the industry that they have been in for years, and you know, they have a really bizarre story, you know, the way they started, they were massively unsuccessful, and they just kept at it, and they become like one of the biggest, you know, just you know, Christian, you know, rock artists in the world.
Dude, where are they from, these guys?
I think they're an East Coast band. I think I could be wrong about that. I don't really know much about them. We used to do some work with their label mates, a band called Bleach back in the day, and so again, irrelevant to the story, but other than to say that it's really interesting. Again, coming at it from, you know, music industry, which is always sort of like super inclusionary, wild goose festival. Everybody's okay. You know, we just got to love. We just got to be accepting. We can't disagree. We can't have a divergent opinion about anything. Everybody's okay. Everything is true. And so that has definitely seeped in, even, you know, in my last days when I was really involved in the industry. But I mean, there's always been that sort of attitude there. So for him to take this kind of a stand, I can only imagine the kind of emails that he's getting right now and the kind of, you know, a resistance that he's facing. What I think is so interesting about a guy like this. And again, I think he's going to pay a cost for this kind of an article. So I'm fascinated from it from that standpoint, which is like he's going to lose some fans and friends over this for sure, and that kind of makes it even more compelling for me for some reasons.
It's nice when there's risk attached, I guess.
Absolutely,
not nice from his standpoint, but just it makes it seem more real. I guess that's where the authenticity comes in. Pipe, what were you about to say?
I was going to say I mean I'm not up on Christian music at all. You know, I don't listen to it. I don't really know. I couldn't name five bands that are popular right now. I don't know if Skillet still is, but I have to guess that he will have gained as many fans as he lost through this.
Probably.
Because he doesn't say anything. He doesn't go after anyone in particular. He doesn't go after any camp in particular. He's talking about it like a phenomenon of prominent Christian influencers leaving the faith and the manner in which they do it, you know? And so he just puts his finger on some different things that I feel like people across the swath of evangelicalism who still claim to be Bible believers will largely go, yeah, what he said. And so my guess is that it'll be really well received by the casual fans, not necessarily the inside industry people like Ronnie was talking about, but I mean, I've only seen people respond to it positively. Now, of course, I am in the, you know, conservative, more biblically orthodox echo chamber. But I think it's going to be positively responded to. And there are going to be people who are like, oh, Skillet, I should go check out their music if this guy's involved.
Pipe, I totally agree. I think you're spot on. Yeah, absolutely. I think, they're still very much on top of the there's not much of a what used to be called a contemporary Christian music scene anymore. But you know, for bands like Skillet, I mean, they're still way at the top. They're up there with like Switchfoot and these bands that have crossed over now, and they're in the mainstream and all of that. So they're massive. I mean, they're selling out arenas and all of those kinds of things. So yeah, wow. So I mean, I think you're right. I think they're going to gain they're probably going to gain way more fans than they're going to lose for sure. But it's still a bold move for a guy like that to make. Given the fact that he didn't need to say anything, so mm-hmm. there was something personal in this for him. I just find that really compelling and fascinating because there was no reason for him to step out and say anything. And so that indicates that there's some level of conviction and faith at work. It seems like in his heart. I don't know. You know.
I didn't mean what I said as a like this was a calculated maneuver to gain fans. Just talking about
not at all.
Of that oddity of you have Christianity and commerce and like what attracts. Fans versus what pushes them away. I mean, he finished this thing with some really strong statements. For example, it is time for the church to rediscover the preeminence of the word and to value the teaching of the word. We need to value truth over feeling, truth over emotion. And what we are seeing now is the result of the church raising up influencers who did not supremely value truth and to have led a generation who also do not believe in the supremacy of truth. He just sort of cuts through the vague, feely cultural BS that really pervades Christian music and even worship music. You know, just so much feeliness.
In Pipe, he even calls himself out as being like, hey, like I'm a guy that when I perform, when I record, like my job is to, is to get people's emotions and feelings, worked up. Like there's a place for that. It's what I do, but it doesn't always just align with the truth. And so for him to make that distinction, I thought was pretty brilliant,
Yeah.
Yeah. He's as thoughtful on this as anybody I've seen come from the side of things, sort of the non-pastoral side of it. He puts it on the line where people have to make a choice, I think, which is really beneficial. You can't just sort of, you can't read this and then respond to a Christian influencer walking away from the faith with sort of a, like, oh, I'm sad, but I kind of understand, but it sounds like they're going to process through things. He's like, no, forget the processing. You either are with Jesus or you're not. And which is, given our cultural climate, that's about as bold as you can get.
Yeah. Boy, speaking of bold, you two being the man of the cloth business. This next topic hits a little bit home, close to home, near and dear. Boys, I want to talk about pastoral Yoda tweets. And I feel like part of being a pastor in 2019, you go to seminary, you do all the study, you put all the books in your office, you buy all your khakis and pressed shirts. And another thing that you need to be able to do is write pastoral Yoda tweets. And I want to talk about the craft of this, and I want to talk about frequency, about craft, about graphics versus no graphics, about starting the tweet with the word pastors, and then dot, 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 and then some Yoda wisdom. I have so many questions, because I feel like if you're going to be a man of the cloth in 2019, like, you got to be good at this. This has got to be a part of your approach. So, Big R, I don't know if we want to name names here, so I'm gonna leave it up to you, but you sent us an example of one of these pastoral Yoda tweets from a gentleman who's been just prolific in this space, man. He's been going to town on these things lately. And this was of the graphic variety. So there was a little bit of like, I don't know what program he used to build this, but he was in his office doing a little Adobe PageMaker, kind of work on the front end here.
I think his assistant was, yeah.
Or his assistant, I don't know who to assign the credit to for this. I mean, in the very Mark Driscoll way of like, attributing sources, we got to get that right. But I don't know who did this. But Ron, how do you feel about pastoral Yoda tweets? And what's your personal philosophy on how you use the Yoda tweets?
Well, I mean, I'd be a hypocrite to, you know, to come at it too strongly because I obviously am a pastoral Yoda tweeter because I, you know.
When did you start Yoda tweeting and what was the thought process behind
it? I think it was the day I became a pastor and I saw that it was written in my job description. You know, it was.
There you go.
Wait, you're a church planter. Sermon every you wrote week. Your own job description.
Right. And then the elders approved of it eventually and said, hey, something's missing here. Pastor Yoda tweets.
It's Ron. So he's in Florida.
Can we add this to your job description? I said, certainly. So they added it and then I had to start doing it. So I don't want to be hypocritical here.
How do you feel like you are at it?
Oh man, dude.
What kind of Yoda tweeting echelon are you in at this point?
Dude, I feel like I don't even feel like I'm close, man. I feel like the dudes that say the clever, like, Yoda thing where the word should be at the end, but it's at the front kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, the word at the front is at the end kind of pastoral Yoda tweets. I mean, dude, I feel like there are just some dudes that are masters at this kind of a thing. Like, the two guys that stick out in my head that do this are Matt Smethurst and Burke Parsons, man. I just feel like... Mm-hmm. Those guys are dizzying, man. In terms
of Smetty's doing some good Yoda work, huh?
Oh, it's wordplay, man. Yeah, it's Yoda wordplay.
He's not prolific, but he is. I mean, when he delivers, he delivers.
Yeah, Piper, how many times a week do you think a pastor should do Yoda stuff? What's the optimum number of Yoda tweets?
I mean, it's got to be once a day.
Oh, wow.
Here's the thing. Really depends on your role at the church. So Ronnie is a senior pastor. It's got to be once a day. Like, this is – it's like a thought for the day kind of thing.
That's lead pastor. We don't use the word senior.
Sorry. I was more acknowledging your age than your role with that one. My
apologies. My God. Wow. Guys, I got to go. I got to resign. Let me sit up straight in my chair.
Don't
hurt yourself.
Get that letter out of the desk drawer.
I know, man. My legs hurt. My back hurts.
So yeah. So for lead pastor, it's once a day at least. I think for somebody. So say like Matt Smethurst, who is, I don't know what his role is at his church. He's on staff with the Gospel Coalition, so he's a content guy, Christian content guy. For him, I'd say like twice a week. You know,
okay. Nice.
In terms of like solid gold goodness on these things, I think if you're like a seminarian, you're probably going to try like three times a day, and you're going to hit like once every other month.
Now, do they have a seminary class in Yoda tweets? I feel like they need this. You should do a whole semester on this.
Well, you know, it's funny. They don't, because academics are really bad at this. This needs to be something that's learned. It's kind of a vocational. Thing. Like, you have to do it as part of the ministry at the church. So this is why it's so important for seminarians to be involved in a local church, so you can learn how to do this kind of thing properly. You learn other things
in the
classroom.
This is boots on the ground, man. Yes. You're not going to learn this in the classroom.
100%.
Yeah, I don't even think we don't even bring dudes in to become like start elder training at our church until they get one Yoda tweet per day.
Yeah, you need to see their Yoda work. Like, you got to see some Yoda track record there.
And then there's like, okay, then check it out, Big T. You probably don't know this, but there's kind of like what I would say like senior Yoda tweeting, which is like Paul David Tripp. Like, he only tweets once a day in the morning.
And
that's
it's 5 a.m. or something like that. So I interviewed him on a leadership podcast I used to do a couple years ago, and he walked through his morning schedule. It's like up at 4:15, you know, in the Word, goes on like a 10-mile bike ride, and then he said, "Then I do my gospel tweet for the day." Like, that's his phrase, my gospel tweet for the day. Sometimes it's a couple, like it's a bit of a thread, but it's like it just happens once. Like, he doesn't reply to tweets.
Usually 3 points. Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
sure.
He's not like pimping products or anything like that. It's just, you know, God's grace, God's goodness, your sin, your repentance. It's the Paul Tripp theme, you know? And, so he has his style for sure.
But what I'm fascinated by, and again, this is not to say that I'm any better than this, other than to say that the ones that shock me, Big T, are what you just described, are the guys that like they do like the big graphic in the banner. That's always just been it's like this mystical thing to me. Like, I don't really know what they're doing.
Baby, do we need to get you into some graphics though?
Well,
we gotta level up your Yoda tweeting.
I mean, so, if it's going to bring me to the next level, then I say yes. Yes, we do.
Let's not close the door. I mean, you know, how bad do you want this? That's the question, you know. Now, how do you feel like, since I'm not a man of the cloth, and Piper, you can speak into this too. Like, so you put out a Yoda tweet in the morning. Like, what are you looking for? What's optimum response? Like, are you looking for a response that says, oh man, what a good word, I needed that today? Or are you just looking for likes? Like, what's best case scenario for a great Yoda tweet? Like, you hit publish on this thing and you're feeling great about yourself. You know, I crushed that.
I know, but baby, the problem is like, I don't have a lot of Twitter, like I don't get a lot of responses on anything. So it doesn't really,
okay.
So I don't, it doesn't even matter. Cause okay, I don't have like that many followers.
Let me propose a metric for you then, Ron. That would be likes or retweets, specifically retweets, because those are better than likes, from particular people who you like. If they do it, you're like, rubber stamped, gold star for me. I have pleased the important person or people. Who would that person or people be potentially?
Baby, when you retweet one of my Yoda tweets, I will tell you.
I did 2 days ago.
You did?
Yes.
See, like, so there, like, it happens and I don't even know.
Dude, that's as joyful and unguarded as I've ever heard Ron. Seriously.
Yeah, you tweeted about humility. Oh, I'm sorry. Five days ago. My bad. I'm looking at your Twitter feed right now so that I can read some of your Yoda tweets.
Did you retweet something?
Read me the one about humility, please.
Okay, so this is just sort of a picture perfect, concise, like deep thought that's also true. Ronnie tweeted very simply, humility makes everything better.
That's it?
That's it. That's the whole thing.
Wow. Was it
maybe you're so disappointed?
I'm waiting for the like.
You're like, wait a minute. So was the punchline? This is not like what happened with his dad at the American.
Now, if you had tweeted that over a graphic of like a sad puppy dog, or like an old golden retriever lying at someone's feet or something.
There we go.
I think that would have garnered a greater response.
Well, Pipe, thanks for retweeting it. I wasn't aware of that. So it shows you that, like, so Big T, it shows you I'm not even that aware. I don't even know. So there you go. I don't know, right?
So did it start with pastors? ... Humility is great, or was it?
Sometimes, but not often.
Observation of that is that Ronnie usually tweets to pastors on Saturday evenings. And occasionally Sunday mornings early.
Dude, Pipe, you are so on it. I don't even know what to say right now.
So and on Mondays. Usually there's a Monday like encouragement after what has been a hard day of ministry would be my guess, or at least just a long day of ministry. So you got like Saturday PM to Monday late morning are the at pastor tweets.
Dude, that's okay.
Wow. What
did I have for breakfast today? I mean, I'm just
I don't know. Did you post a picture on Instagram? Because it's probably like a scone and some berries on a square white plate with, you know, some foliage in the background.
Baby, I'm whole 30. I can't do the.
He hasn't had a scone in 10 years. Come on, Piper. What are you, a savage?
I mean, take an interest, man. Don't you know anything about my life?
Take an interest. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Boys, the reason I ask all that is that I see a business opportunity here. I see a potential gold mine for Happy Rant Corporate, because I feel like the business of Yoda tweeting can be automatized. Like, we can come up with like some sort of Mad Libby algorithm that where people subscribe to the service and we just put a Mad Lib of Yoda tweets together for them.
Oh, it's genius. So there's a website. I don't know if it still exists, but we used to use it when I was in meetings at Lifeway. It was called the Corporate BS Generator.
And nice. I'm going to look for it right now.
It would just spit out phrases that, you know, and it's just all business and marketing and metric catchphrases. And so then the goal would be to work those into conversation, you know, we're talking about conversion rates on a website or yada yada, and to work one of those in and just see who in the room sort of nods knowingly, like, yes, that's good, we should do that, and all you said was nothing, it was just a pile of syllables. I think we can do that,
dude. We need this. I'm looking at that website right now, and they've got like a huge list of words in all the different parts of speech. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a button that says generate. And I just did it. So this is my BS corporate phrase. Collaboratively optimize high quality systems.
I'm pretty sure I used that one in a meeting one time based off that website or something very close to it.
Wow. Yeah. I love it. And I feel like we could do the same thing for pastoral Yoda tweets.
So wait a minute, Pipe. You're trying to tell me nobody's come up with a pastoral version of that?
I'm not saying nobody. I'm saying I'm unaware. But also, if they haven't monetized it, then the opportunity is still there for us. We just need to beat them to the punch.
All right. So can we get this on our website then, man?
Yeah. If we were to so here's the thing. I think we would need a little support from somebody who can do the actual coding and development part of this. We can come up with the words. We need them to come up with the generator part of this. And then,
Ronald, you know who's good with computers? Your new neighbor.
Oh.
Trogzy. Yeah.
Absolute.
Do we have to share a cut of the proceeds with him?
No, we do not.
Okay.
I'll just let him continue to tithe to my church.
There you go.
It's
Dude, just privilege. Let him hang out with you like twice a month. That'll be his
Correct.
Payment.
Correct.
Yeah. Have him over for lunch or dinner or whatever. That'll be enough.
Have him over for hipster popsicles.
Yeah, a little hipster popsicle. 89
Wait,
bucks
are those Whole 30 approved?
No, they're not. That's when I'm just getting a little, off it and a little crazy.
Gotcha. But no scones.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of bread, man. That's a lot of, that's a lot of carbs, a lot of bread.
Yes, I know what scones are made out of. I was just, just trying to figure out where the lines are. I don't know the whole 30 at all, except that it seems to make people miserable and skinny.
So you don't know the whole 30 at all? That's why I'm telling you what bread is, you know? I mean.
Thanks.
Baby, how many pounds have you lost on the whole 30?
Now, you know less things now. So
oh, right.
Baby, how many pounds are you down? What are we looking at?
Well, man, the problem is that, I was off it for a little while because I wanted to eat scones. So I think I need to lose about 5.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough times right now.
Dude, maybe we can get some before and after pics on the website, Piper.
Man, I would really love for us not to do that.
People can track Ron's weight loss.
We have some live events that we haven't announced yet next year, and I'm gearing up for that already. That's how I think. That's how far in advance I think.
You got to fit into your live event jeans.
Absolutes.
I love it.
My LEJs, man. My live event
LEJs, jeans. Live event jeans. Yeah.
Man, this podcast is dead. We've just
destroyed. We've killed it.
We're done. I mean, we're so done. Yeah. We're looking at us. We keep just saying words instead of like ending it.
This is like the podcast BS generator.
I'm not ending it. I'm not done yet. I want to see how long it can go. But we need to get Ronald out of here, Piper, because he's got food to not eat and he's got pastoral Yoda tweets to work on.
There's literally like a plate of scones right here that I'm not going to eat. So please let me go so I can not eat them.
Dude, you just bake them to not eat them. It makes you feel in control.
Big M, bakes them to not eat them. Big M won't. Here's the thing, boys. Big M won't stop. She will not. This is what's hard for me. She won't stop. She won't stop baking things, making things, and I don't know what to do about that. And it's
she's not eating them either, though.
No, right? She doesn't eat them. But but they're just staring at me. They're tempting me, and I don't know what to do.
Dude, what do you do with them? If you don't eat them and she doesn't eat them, why is she baking them?
We throw them away.
No,
we give them away.
Photograph them.
We wrap them up. We have this thing we do. We wrap up our desserts. We get on our bikes and we like deliver them to people in our congregation. So we do that on Saturdays. But it's like so hard because like I want to eat half the stuff we're wrapping up.
And by I'm going to go out on a limb here. Okay, don't take this as me trying to tell you how to do your job.
No, please.
I feel like
my job.
I feel like. Your level of connection with the Midwesterners that you're the pastor of would ratchet up like exponentially if you actually like ate the food that they ate.
You mean like you know what I mean? 25 pounds?
Yeah. If you were to break bread with them,
right,
and by
in.
Breaking bread, I mean actually breaking bread. I don't know. I think they might
with
like
your
that.
Teeth. You have to break it with your teeth. That's how eating bread works.
No. I do. I like I'll eat the bread, but then I'll spit it out when they're not looking.
Sure. You go vomit it up in the bathroom.
Correct.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's good then. Everybody wins. Everybody wins.
And everybody
except
wins.
For Ronnie's happiness.
Yeah, my happiness doesn't win. My happiness right now in particular has been lost forever.
Because we're still doing this podcast?
This is insane how long we're dragging this
out.
Baby,
go read some Yoda tweets.
I feel like all the inspiration for Yoda tweeting is dead now for a week.
I'm not saying write some. You need to consume some Yoda tweets. That's what these are here for. I mean,
I gotta go see what Darren Patrick's writing, and then I'll get
there's a whole Twitter full of encouragement just waiting for you. If like all the other means of encouragement aren't enough, you should get on there and read some.
Should we do a podcast one of these days? Because we're kind of doing it right now, where it's almost like the dance where you see how long you can dance all night, and whoever stays up the longest wins. I mean,
it's like a Senate filibuster.
Literally, like we're just gonna like one of these days somebody's gonna click on the podcast and it's gonna be like 4 hours in and we're still talking about nothing.
I love it.
We'll have to get like mobile microphones so that we can do it, you know, while making trips to the bathroom and whatever else. Or just rotate through. Right. Yeah, that would be.
But if we did it at our next like live thing and we're like, if you want to sit with us all night, we're gonna do the Guinness Book of World Records of like longest podcast of all time. Maybe we'll
kind
get
kind of an Andy Warhol thing, kind of like.
Maybe we'll get that award. Maybe we can literally, like, I'm being serious. Maybe we can literally do that—the longest recorded podcast of all time.
Baby, you know what I love about that?
I think this is the longest recorded podcast of all time, or maybe that's just in my heart. It's the longest.
This is the worst.
I love how the Guinness Book of World Records is like the most '80s thing. It's like the '80s-est thing, people talked about it and cared about it in the 80s, and it's probably no longer even a thing anymore. But
we still do. Like when I say Guinness, like I'm thinking Guinness, man. I'm thinking I want to win that. I want to get
Dude,
that.
Let's go for it. Let's make a run at like a Guinness thing as
how
a podcast.
How do we even find out how long? I mean, I wonder if that's even a category, or would we be creating a new category?
Dude, we got to get the book. We got to get a copy of the Guinness Book of World Records. I want this in hand.
I bet the interwebs can tell us that question. Tell us the answer.
I bet we have
some.
Be the one. You'd be the guy to figure that out, man.
We probably got some great know-it-alls that listen to our podcast who can enlighten us on this matter.
Listeners, give us a "well, actually" on this one. Well, actually, the longest podcast is fill in the blank. Go for it.
Because that's kind of a random category. We might be creating a category.
I love it. Trailblazers. We're pioneers, boys.
How long could we go? How long could we go realistically?
This has been 51 minutes, which is...
I know, but like if we were doing a live show, like could we go like 5 hours?
Oh, easy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even think that'd be hard. I think once we got to like 6+, it would start to be real challenging.
But I mean, here we are at 51 minutes and we're like, yeah, we got nothing.
Well, that's because we used up topics. I mean, we could... Yeah. Any one of us could jump on the web right now. We could start talking about the longest podcast. I could go find that information, but I just don't feel like it because I would like this to be over.
Yeah. We really have nothing to do today, any of us, do we?
I think I would too. Let's have it be over, boys. Are we in agreement on that?
I don't know. I mean, is there a reason why we'd want it to be over right now?
I'm hungry.
You can't be hungry. It's 2:30.
I kind of skipped lunch, and then we just spent like 44 minutes talking about scones.
Oh. Let me have Big M send you some scones, Pipe. How about that, man? We'll FedEx you some of our latest creations. They'll be delicious.
I'm in.
All right, just send me your address. You want some, Big T?
Yeah, baby, I'll take a scone.
Cool. All right, well, let me serve you men in this way.
Wow, that's big.
Baked
man.
Goods. I love my baked goods. I can't eat them, but I want you
I
to
also
eat
love it. Your baked goods. Let's do this.
All right, boys. Well, we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics, and we're both excited, Pipe, about baked goods from the Martin household. I love getting baked items from people who don't eat them. So that promises
they don't even,
to be
they
a real
don't even
treat.
Know if they're good. They're just like, it looks
exactly.
pretty.
Yeah, it looks
I'll
nice.
Take a bite, chew it, and spit it out. So I'll test to its taste. And
there
delicious.
We go. Okay. That's good. Boys, we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
If you're tired of parenting advice and news headlines that are more confusing than assembling IKEA furniture, we've got just the podcast for you. My dear friend Abby and I are here to help you navigate the parenting roller coaster.
Should your kids be on social media? What should you tell a friend facing an unplanned pregnancy? These are just some of the many questions we tackle on our podcast.
Subscribe to The Real Deal of Parenting wherever you find your podcast.